You are listening to FPEA Connects, a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.
Welcome to episode number 86 of FPEA Connects. I am Suzanne, and I'm here today with Sharon. Hey, Sharon.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
I know you're going to be good in a minute because we're going to talk about something that you like to talk about today.
I know. I'm excited.
Yes, we are here today, and if you're joining in and listening, you are going to take a fun little trip down a history walk through the Keys, mainly focused on Key West and how did we get there. Okay, so do you like the Keys, Sharon?
I love the Keys. You
love
know me.
The Keys. I do. Know you do. I love the Keys, and like Sharon has heard the story many times, but not everybody has. So I'm going to tell you. The Keys are where I found my first connection to that whole loving Florida, living free, and getting what it meant, right? Mm-hmm. I loved being a kid in Florida. But when we moved to the Florida Keys, which was like the great unknown from our North Florida roots, when we moved to the Keys, it was a totally different place. There was no little small town America feel.
Nope.
There was no country bumpkin kind of, you know what I mean? It was definitely a different place to live. And I can remember when I was there thinking a lot of the time, like, I mean, we drove for hours to move there, right? And there were roads that looked like, how did you get a road in the middle of the ocean? Right? And as a kid, you can imagine, because I was like 9 years old.
Yeah.
As a kid, I'm sitting there looking at this thinking, are we going to fall off?
And
is this road going to break and fall in the ocean? I mean, it was just a bizarre new place to explore and experience. And I remember thinking back then, like, how do people find the Keys? You know,
yeah.
How do people get here? Because the roads weren't always there. And, you know, can you imagine the first settlers coming to the Florida area in general? Like, first of all, it's beautiful. It's sunshiny. There's, you know, people come from places that have disease and harsh winters and all that kind of stuff. And they come to Florida. And like, wouldn't that be amazing? Like, it was amazing for me just living here anyway. But the difference and the different places. But who thought of finding the Keys? The Keys are like 1,700 little islands.
It was the pirates down there in the Caribbean.
It had to be the pirates.
They knew where it was at.
They were trying to hide it. But yeah, so I used to think, you know, how do people get here anyway? So I've always kind of had an interest in knowing how the Keys were developed and knowing how you ended up with Key West. And that's where we're going to really focus today, is talking about Key West. Because Key West, oddly enough, if you know anything about the Keys, when you leave the mainland of Florida, the first main key that you come to is Key Largo. Well, Key West is the last one. As a matter of fact, Key West is the southernmost point in the United States. It is 90 miles from Cuba. My dad used to call it the jumping off place. Like, that was the end of the end of, okay. So you had to get from the mainland to Key West. And it's interesting that Key West is the one that really develops the first. It's like the oldest one, the oldest key. And so people were going there and trying to get there before they were really worried about other areas. You know, it's just really kind of interesting to me. But so we're going to talk about how the Keys developed and how Key West built up. And so if you, like I said, if you heard what I was talking about a minute ago, 1,700 little islands that extend from an area up north called Soldier Keys all the way down to what we know as the Dry Tortugas. But the land area of the Keys is like 137 square miles. So, I mean, we're talking about, it's not that big.
Nope.
But traversing the area to get from one place to the other was quite an accomplishment for people.
Yes, it was.
We're talking early 1800s, okay? Because 1812 was when Florida and all the territory, including the Florida Keys, actually was officially a part of the territory of the United States.
Right.
So, like I said, the oldest key is Key West. And it was in 1821, so it had been a few years, 1821, that Key West was purchased by a man named John Simonton. How much do you think he paid for it?
$10.
No, it was not as good a deal as that.
No.
Seriously. The islands of Key West, $2,000.
Oh, wow.
It would cost that much to stay there for a week in one room.
I know.
Right? And he bought the whole island. But yeah, so he bought the island, and it was not long after, like seriously, the next year, 2 years, that people started settling there and calling it home.
Uh-huh.
So it developed pretty quickly. Being the tropical environment that it was, they were able to have groves of things like key limes and tamarind and breadfruit, things that would grow well. And there, even pineapple. Did you know that they had pineapple plantations in Key West?
No, I didn't.
They did. They even, in the late 1800s, built a pineapple factory that actually furnished the majority of the canned pineapple to most of the eastern part of the United States and North America. And so it was a great place to grow a lot of wonderful tropical fruits that we know and love now. And it wasn't much longer, I guess, by the 1890s, that you saw a lot of wealth coming to Key West.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the people that were growing things and factories for pineapples and things like that, but also you had people that were your maybe pirate types who settled in the area because there were a lot of wrecks,
mm-hmm.
and they were salvagers that were living here because off the reefs out there, of course, there were a lot of shipwrecks,
yeah.
and people would look for treasure, lost treasure at sea. So, but by 1890s, Key West was considered the largest city in the state of Florida.
That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
That I would have never guessed that.
You wouldn't have thought that. Just thinking about
it,
right?
I also am amazed that Key West was I never knew that it was the first one really established and mm-hmm. developed. That's wild.
It's wild. But for it to be the largest city in the state of Florida, and it was on its way to becoming the wealthiest city in the United States.
Now that's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
At that point in time,
1890s. I guess wealthy people had to have been wealthy to live there because transportation would have been like by boat and whatnot.
Yeah, there had to be some element of wealth. And so, like I said, they were building that up with those people who wanted to come and be a part of that mm-hmm. island life. So it was an exciting place to live, for sure. And, you know, a lot of people settled into this new little wild frontier that we know is Florida and the Keys and called it home. And it wasn't really long before Henry Flagler caught a vision for what he could do and what kind of way he could make his claim to fame and some money
right
in this venture, right?
He really figured out Florida's tourism for sure.
He figured it out. And he knew that there were people who would want to explore paradise.
Right.
I mean, that's what he knew. And so he made plans to extend what was the Florida East Coast Railway from Homestead, which was the mainland still in Florida, to Key West. And man, people gave him a rough time about this, that, you know, he would not be able to successfully do this.
Right.
And it was a hard job.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It was quite an engineering feat for him.
It really was.
He had to get people that were willing to come down, and there were lots of lives lost. We have been, in our trips to the Keys, we know about Pigeon Key.
I was just thinking about Pigeon Key when you were talking about that.
Pigeon Key is, you know, where they housed mm-hmm. hundreds of those men who worked on the railroad, and the life was not glamorous.
No, I imagine not.
The work was not glamorous. You know, it was hard work to build that railroad.
And we know what the weather's like down there, too. Yeah. It's not always cooperative. Hurricanes in the summer, rain in the summer.
Yep, and we'll get to some adventures with
those.
And
heat in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a not like the most appealing job, but there were mm-hmm. people who were willing to go there and to do the work. They pushed through and they completed the job finally in 1912. And the first train on Flagler's Railroad went to Key West January 22nd, 1912. And they called, I love this, they called his railroad the railroad that went to sea.
Oh,
because
wow.
that, you know, if you've ever been mm-hmm. to the Keys, you've been to the Keys.
Yes.
But people who have not been to the Keys may not realize that really is all it looks like. It just looks like a railroad out in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, it's wild.
For miles and miles. It's crazy.
There's nothing like it.
It's nothing like you've ever really seen before. So these people who came on the train, they were met with cheering crowds. I mean, this was a great new place for them to have vacation, experience paradise. Like I said, it was a great place. Wealthy travelers would soon make that their home and start to settle there. And you would get other businesses that would start to come in that were productive, successful businesses. Mm-hmm. One was sponge harvesting. Something that became...
That's interesting.
Yep. And then, of course, the Cuban cigar factories.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, again, close to Cuba, there was a lot of investment in the Cuban cigar factory business in Florida, not just in the Keys, but in other areas. So, I mean, this whole area became a magnet for those who were adventure seekers, wanted to explore paradise. But it also brought interesting characters down, right? So you will find lots of stories about interesting people. One would be the author Ernest Hemingway, right?
Yeah.
He made a home in Key West later. But it was during the 20s that he would come there and he would be experiencing that and thinking, wow.
That's you know, a good place to write.
Yeah. So, so many people, I mean, and I would say just like today, so many people were enchanted with Key West and living there and making that their home and the lifestyle that was the Key West lifestyle. So it has got its own, you know, unique
vibe.
Feel. It does have its own vibe. But Key West could not avoid the 1930s and the Great Depression, right?
Nope.
So just like the rest of America, Key West was looking at some bleak times. The city of Key West went bankrupt during that time. And to add insult to injury, Labor Day of 1935 was it's an unnamed hurricane. We only call it the Labor Day Hurricane of 1935, but it pretty much destroyed the railroad. I mean, that was when Flagler's Railroad that went to sea, went out to sea. That was where it took the trip. But with it gone, the plans developed and started to develop for the Florida Overseas Highway that would be built and that would take the place of the railroad eventually. So those plans were put into motion. And, you know, now you've traveled the Overseas Highway.
I have.
So it's like 113 miles of road.
Stuck behind boats. One lane, nine boats.
There you go. Definitely. But it's like 42 bridges that connect all of these, you know. And some of those bridges that span those waters, like I said, the engineering feats for the time that they were built were incredible. It was 1938 when that road was finally completed. And, you know, we're looking 1938, 1940s, World War II. And really, once this road was opened up and the men came home, women came home from World War II, the 1950s became that generation of tourists who were hitting the road in their cars and traveling with their families. Mm-hmm. So that road made the Key West area and all of the Keys accessible to families now to experience and to travel. And it's a beautiful adventure. You know, they have the All-American Road. Is an elite distinction that they give. The National Scenic Byways Program gives that distinction to certain roads in America.
Right.
And there's only 30. That road to Key West, the Overseas Highway, is one of them. It got the distinction in 2009. So in Florida, it's the only one. But, you know, that just goes to tell you how much of a unique experience. It's kind of like when I was, you know, growing up, I can remember people always talking about wanting to travel like Route 66 and things like that. This would be that kind of experience. I mean, you know, so if you're a Floridian and you've never been down there, it is just worth taking the road trip. It is worth that because it's beautiful. But so the early days of exploring Key West, building Key West, and just that whole process of getting there, it was a pretty wild adventure, right? But, you know, I moved to the Keys in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so there were still adventures to be had in the Keys. And the ones that we're going to talk about now are things that I remember actually happening. And I think it's kind of cool to talk about this. But, you know, it doesn't just because you feel like things are settled and not so much of a wild frontier anymore does not mean that you're not just living in some kind of delusion, because things are still pretty wild. And, you know, it's the part of that living wild and free. That
well, it's definitely still wild down
it
there.
It is definitely wild down there. It is. Right? And so there would be lots of stories still of the ships that were lost at sea and wrecks that happened. And, you know, even when we lived there, there were treasure seekers, treasure hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And one that became pretty popular, you probably would recognize his name, it was Mel Fisher. Mel Fisher was a treasure hunter, and he was his crew that discovered the Atosha, which was off the waters of Key West, and it had been wrecked, and they had quite a fortune that they found on this on the ship. And so it was a lot of work, years of work to, you know, continue to explore that wreck. And they got a bit famous. I mean, you used to watch all of his shows on TV talking about all that stuff. But if there's treasure in play, so are your buddies. They showed up, the pirates.
The pirates.
In the 1970s. Pirates in the 1970s, yeah.
I bet they didn't look the same.
They didn't look the same.
They didn't look like those 14th century buccaneers. Probably not.
I don't think so. But in 1979, pirates at the site of the Atosha fired shots at Mel Fisher and his crew.
Oh, wow.
Trying to get it. So it wasn't the only exciting treasure found off of the Florida coast by any stretch of the imagination. But the story of modern day pirates, I can guarantee you, had me having some very interesting thoughts as I sat on the beaches down there.
Oh, like, boy, I bet you did.
Is that a pirate ship? You know, so it's really just interesting to think about things, because you don't think about there still being pirates, you know, out there.
Well, not out there. I think of them being over in Europe, or not Europe.
Right.
The Middle East and all that.
So, yeah, it was quite an interesting experience to live. We lived in Key Largo, not in Key West. We lived in that first key. So, it was an experience, and you learned a lot, and there was a lot of adventure. I remember one of the things that really stuck out in my mind, because we lived northbound. So that means basically the highway is separated, and you leave either on the southbound side headed to Key West, or the northbound headed back north to Miami and Homestead. We lived on the northbound side, and I guess it was in 1980 that the Mariel boat lift with Cuban refugees happened. That was 125,000 Cuban refugees that were brought over, mostly to Key West. Again, you know, Key West is there. But also what happened is they would take the refugees, and they were trying to get them to Miami, to places where they could assimilate entire society and everything. So they did that by putting them on buses. You know, I can remember standing out in my yard watching those buses going by, like jumping up and down, waving my hands and thinking, you know, welcome to America, you know, because it's great because you're hearing on the news what's happening. I mean, some of the things that you heard and the stories that you heard about how people were trying so hard to get to America would make you want to cry, just because it was like, you know, you only read about this stuff in books and things about history, but here are real people that you're watching take that trip because they've sacrificed everything and left their homeland, you know, to come to America.
Floated across the ocean.
In crazy, crazy circumstances. So that definitely made an impression on me. And, you know, I think even now when we take our trips to the Keys, it's always an adventure. I think anything that you do when you're going out into places that are not as developed and not as, what's the word I'm looking? It's definitely not a prim and proper kind of lifestyle. You're going into these places where people are just very relaxed and they're living and laid back. And it's definitely a great experience to travel down there. And of course, I couldn't have a conversation about Key West without talking about like my favorite possibly topic.
My favorite.
Related to QS. Personally, I don't think you can really dive in and explore any culture unless you experience their food, right? Because you learn so much about it. And of course, Key West had such a influence from other islands like Cuba. I mean, you can go down there and you're going to find amazing Cuban food in the Keys. And Bahamian food, Bahamian conch chowder is probably some of the best you'll ever get your hands on. It's down there. Conch fritters. And all of the local delicacies, like, you know, definitely the stone crabs and the spiny lobsters and mm-hmm. the key pink shrimp, you know. But the favorite for me, the thing I can't go to Key West and leave without having is the key lime pie.
Yep. That's my favorite.
It's your favorite too, right? So when we get down there, should we admit to this?
Nope, it's our secret. No, it's not our secret. So we'll share.
When we go down there, how many times do we eat key lime pie? I think every single chance we get, we might eat
key lime pie. I think I ate it every meal last time.
Yeah.
Got to get key lime pie for dessert.
Some kind of key
lime
pie.
It's an excuse.
It is an excuse. Perfect excuse. But one of the things that I always have found interesting about the key lime pie is the way that it came to existence.
Mm-hmm.
Or popularity, maybe. And there's probably a little bit of legend and myth mixed in with some of the truth here, you know, but the story is
whatever
still
makes
great,
it more right? interesting
or whatever. But so of course, before Flagler's Railroad came to Key West, right, there was a lack of refrigeration in the Keys, and lack of refrigeration also meant milk was scarce. There were some scarce items, right? And so the men who were going out on boats, fishing boats, whatever it may have been, had to have food with them. And it was very common for them to take canned milk with them, right? Sweetened condensed milk. That's what they would take because they couldn't keep it on the ships any other way. So that, along with some of the other items that they had, some of the key limes that grew so prolifically.
Yeah, they had a lot of them.
Lots of key limes. Had abundance of those. So between the key limes and soda crackers and the canned milk, there was a ship cook who came up with this concoction that we now know as key lime pie. It was great. The milk curdled the limes and the eggs, and
he should be in some sort of hall of fame, this man.
He might be. He may be. But it was a great answer. And not only that, limes were known to help prevent diseases like scurvy and things like that, you know. So it was very popular. But what happened that made it interesting is there was a millionaire, probably the Key West's first millionaire, is William Curry. And he had a cook. And so this cook came across this recipe, tried to make it a little bit fancier, a little bit healthier with graham crackers for the crust instead of the soda crackers. But as she developed that, she developed that recipe. She would serve it at his big, you know, get-togethers, parties. So it became a delicacy. And of course, not being on the ship, when you use the eggs and the egg whites, they would get whipped into this meringue. This is one of my favorite parts of the story. So Key West and the people who live in the Keys have been referred to for years as conchs, right? After our conch shells, of course, but conchs. So if you ate the key lime pie with a meringue on top, it's called conch style. And I love it because it's where you see it in the Keys. In most places that you travel today, you never see it.
I shouldn't say never, but
yeah.
It's my favorite version.
My favorite version too is absolutely the conch style. And so if you take a trip to Key West or the Keys anywhere, actually, you don't just have to go to Key West to get that conch style.
I can think of somewhere.
If you take a trip, then you definitely need to experience the key lime pie and just enjoy a little bit of that backstory because it gives it a little bit more fun to add to it. But they have some really great places there to try key lime pie. But they also have developed some different interesting versions of key lime pie. Mm-hmm. Like they have the key lime pie on a stick covered in chocolate, which my son really loves. And I'm like, I don't even know about that. But it's a great experience. And I would suggest, again, if you're going to take the trip, explore the food and experience the food. Because it gives you a whole different layer of love for a culture. And Key West is definitely a culture
It is.
To explore.
It really is.
So if you want to do that, with FPEA, you've got a chance to do that coming up summer of 2020, right?
Yep.
This will be our third year taking that trip, and you can follow us on our website to find out all the details about that trip when they get posted and we're ready to book it. But it's a great family opportunity because we have a lot of interesting little excursions that we take together.
Yep.
And a lot of fun that we have together. So Sharon has the most fun.
I do. It's do. Science, history, and lots of time in the water.
That's right. And lots of key lime pie.
That too.
That's part two. So if you are listening in today and this is your first time and you're not connected with FPEA, check us out on our website. It's www.fpea.com. We have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest that you can follow us on. We have all kinds of resources, tidbits, great helps for homeschooling, getting homeschooling, started homeschooling legally in Florida. And if you already are connected, take advantage of some of these events and these great things that we do together.
Yeah.
Don't forget to check out our website because right now, currently, we are booking, taking registrations for our FPEA 2020 homeschool convention to be held in June. Is this the first time ever, maybe, that it's been held in June?
I think so.
We'll have to check out that history, but I think it might be.
I think
it's
it
in
is.
June. And we're taking registrations for that now, so you don't want to miss out on that either. And thank you for listening in today as we talk about something that we love so dearly. Mm-hmm. And we look forward to chatting again next time.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed our show and will join us next time for FPEA Connects. You can find us on the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network at ultimateradioshow.com. For more information about FPEA, visit us at our website, fpea.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. Until next time, stay connected.